Hashem. I'm glad to see that we all survived Hanukkah. I'm sure. I hope that we all came out, inspired, uplifted. It's only a few minutes. It's still fresh, Hanukkah. It's only a few minutes. You have to say to Chavon.
I still have a donut in my stomach.
Maybe until the donut is digested, it feels like it's like being mamshech. Maybe we can find some shittas that's not so, it's not Pesach Chavon yet, like some chumitik shittas. We can still eat another donut. So, what we have to say, everybody say, what was the last time we worked on, we got together? We were working on the Osias, right? The Osias and the Adias. Bechlal, all the mitzvahs that are Adias, and also specifically on Hanukkah, we try to focus on the Adias of Hanukkah, that the Nair, the light that comes out of that. Yeah, something you want to share with us?
I wasn't here for the last group dose, but I did speak to Moshe about it. What I just tried to do is I tried to, every night before lighting and after lighting, I tried to get my family involved in trying to think about an element of what the light, what the menorah is symbolizing, what the shaman is symbolizing, what the, just different things to, then that was positive.
But
I don't have any other major insights.
I think that's very good.
You do very good with getting your family involved with you. Very good.
Yeah.
If you can't find him, join him. Or make better still, you get him to join you. What do you have to say?
I follow my namesake's example, and our family, I told stories, we asked different things, as a candle lit. We're very much, we're not only the women don't do anything, also the men just sit around and...
In general over here, do the women light candles?
My daughter did, but that's probably because her seven brothers do, so my wife for sure doesn't.
What do you have to say, Ramosha?
I just had one aura of symbol. And we're talking about the Osios, and I for some reason back many years ago, in looking at the class I was taking, it talked about the idea of symbolism. And really the Osios and the Adios, it's a symbol. I mean, we take something, a symbol is a picture or an idea that symbolizes something much larger than that. That's what an Os is, that's what an Adios is, that's what these are. So, just like tefillin, I mean, I was just thinking of in Yiddishkeit, we have a lot of symbols that we use to try to bring out larger ideas. I just didn't really think about that in that context anymore.
I mean, the idea of symbolism, it sounds like the right idea. I don't know if that's the idea of Oisit and Moshe. I think it's not so much symbolism as that. Maybe we have a different translation, movement symbolism is that. That's exactly what you have to verbalize it. Like you're doing this act, and the act is supposed to speak out this message. Like when you eat the matzah, right? So you're supposed to think of the matzahs that they ate in Mitzrayim, right, when they went out. Is that called symbolism? I don't know if that's symbolism.
No, maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's probably a lot of different interpretations of symbolism.
No, it's
you're saying a little stronger. It's not just a symbol. You're saying it actually recreates the act, or it's something that represents.
Like it's supposed, when you eat it, it's supposed to relive. And a lesson, it's supposed to be telling you a lesson.
Right.
But I mean, each ice is a different thing. Like let's say the tefillin. So the hirotzen that we said before, we put on the tefillin, is a very good, very rich source of what the tefillin is supposed to make us think of. The way I understand symbolism, I wouldn't think that's what we say. In the tzitzis, over there maybe you have symbolism, like it says that the tchelet is symbolic for the symbolic for the sky, the blue and the sky. That over there you would think that's what I think would be symbolic.
So what's the pirsume nisa of Hanukkah then? The light, is it meant to be an actual, are we supposed to look at the actual light itself as light, or as symbolic of the victory of our role in the world? I mean, all those things.
Spend a lot of time on Hanukkah, the week of Hanukkah, with this thing you're bringing up. And, the light of the menorah, is supposed to, like, the light and the light emanate, the light comes out. The light, when you see that light, it's like the light is calling out to you a message. When you have light, the rays of light coming out, and the rays coming out is supposed to be telling you to remember about the wicked Yevonim, how terrible they are, and they almost were successful in destroying the Torah, and that this girl who saved us, the light is saying this, the rays are emanating from the light, and they're saying, remember that this girl who reinstated the Torah in our hands, we almost lost it. The light is saying that. The light is supposed to say, remember how bad the Yevonim were. Remember that we almost lost the Torah. Mamish Kipshutei, very close to that. And remember that how HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved the Torah in our hands through unbelievable, tremendously miraculous, the miracles of the Maccabeim that were so weak and so few compared to the hundreds and thousands of troops of the Goyim. And when he saved the Torah, he did it in a very outspoken way, clear that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like, let's say the Nazis, the Yimach Shemam, what they did, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Israel from them also, right? But it was a very natural way. The U.S. Army, World War, the Allies, So we saved the Germans through natural means of a world war. And of course, the ones who gave the Eighth Dishmaya, to the Allies, and the Mamish Nisim also, the Germans were very, very close, to having a bomb also, an atomic bomb. So intimate stories about what's going on. There were Nisim also, but the Mamish, like, we would save the Germans, like from the American army, right, the Allied troops. So everything is Yaitu Nishmai and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then see, like, Mamish Yad Hashem. Here, like, these Maccabeim, you have to understand, there were just a few of them, and they were weak, old, people, they were Moshe Nefesh. They put all the strength to fight, but they were. And it was only a handful of how many there were. And the going had hundreds of thousands of the strongest troops, and they united all together because they couldn't bear the thought that a few Yidden had the koyach to do what they were doing. So the going joined, they joined these war elephants, which they agreed not to use, and now they're using the war elephants. Like, it was mind-boggling for them that these boys, you know, two Yidden were a real challenge. To hundreds of thousands of troops. So when we see the light coming out of the menorah, supposed to say those words that I'm saying now, supposed to remind us of the Zohar in the Gala, just like this light is coming out. So the light of Hashem came out also and, you know, destroyed the Yevonim. The light of Hashem, Mamish, it's called the light of Hashem because it wasn't even a Nes, because it's more than a Nes. It's like you have Nisim, different levels, but you have a level that is like you see pure Yad Hashem without any, you know, like the Mon. It says the pure Yad Hashem, you know, food born from heaven. You never have anything like that ever. Nothing dome there, nothing even, you know, similar. For bagels and lox, born, you know, with cream cheese, from Borough Park, born from the sky. There's nothing similar that ever happened. But pure Hashem from Hashem. So, that was such an awesome miracle that every single week, three times over Shabbos, you eat Lechem Mishnah. So, like, imagine you have, once a year you have a Chanukah, because it has those Nisan, 8 days. You have a Pesach, a Matzah, Moroch, and you have a Sukkot Teshu. But the Gavi, the Nes of the Lechem Mishnah, that in one fell, and Shabbos twice the amount fell in Shemayim. It's such an awesome Nes that every week, we three times we have a meal and we serve Lechem Mishnah to announce that Nes and to, you know, to be Yisrael from it, and we overcome with Emunah and Bitachin and joy, you know, that the Baruch Hu did it for us. Such a, you know, I don't know if you don't realize it's like on Shabbos. You make Kiddush like a Mishnah. Like a Mishnah. I don't know. It would be a very special thing if when the meals are Shabbos meals, the Baruch Hu is missing. Because it's a good activity with the family. Every one of the meals that before, you know, make the mosi, before mosi preferably, or after mosi, that you should, you know, that, take note, the family having this Lechem Mishnah is to commemorate the miracle that happened, you know, in the Midbar for 40 years, that all the week, if you had extra stuff, the book is just saying, to share with the family. Like you're kind of talking about the Lechem Mishnah, that it's such a specialness that every week three meals we have Lechem Mishnah to commemorate that miracle. So it should be a very worthy activity that on Shabbos by the three meals, you know, when you have a Lechem Mishnah, you know, just speak out that it's not just Indian to have Lechem Mishnah, it's commemorate this tremendousness that during the week, if you had a drop extra that the family needed, it melted, it went away. And on Erev Shabbos, twice the amount fell down, the Shemayim, and you put it away on Shabbos, right? Twice the amount. And you saw that Shkochot Hashem was there. Okay, one again.
Hosea.
I almost said it. Rabbi Hosea. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Moshe, you said what you wanted to say, right? Yeah.
Hosea.
I tried to do was after we lit the lights, I'll try to make a special point about just looking at them. Just seeing the light and seeing what it said to me. Nothing unusual, no great revelation that we hadn't said tonight. But what we did afterward is I would read through, it was just my wife and I and Baruch, one of our sons was home. So we read through all of the Josephus section that dealt with the entire story of Yehuda and the brothers and the wars. And we just read through.
Where did you read it from? Josephus himself?
Yeah. No, from Josephus. Well, an English translation of
Josephus.
Josephus.
From the Josephus book itself.
Yeah.
War of the Jews?
No, it's in Antiquities of the Jews. Most of it's in Antiquities of the Jews. And War of the Jews didn't start until like after the Roman destruction. Anyway. So it's in one of the major books, and it goes through about 7, 8, 9 chapters. It's quite a lengthy passage. What it reminded me of, or maybe I just forgot, never knew, was how much of the war took place after the dedication. I mean, that was like the easy part in one sense. And then the war kept on going for a long time after that, for a number of years after that. Most of the battles were all after that. And it was just a reminder that, you know, when you think you've got something figured out, that may just be the beginning of the battle. We oftentimes think, right, that was the miracle, that was it. That was the culmination, which is the beginning. It's just the beginning of the battle. So, you know, so I thought that was a big, strong lesson that first.
Just want say it in one sentence again, okay. What you just said. Say it again.
The actual cleansing of the Beit HaMikdash and the rededication of the Mizbeach was, in a sense, the beginning of the activity. Most of the wars took place after that.
I mean, I don't know if most of them took place, a lot of them I know just took place, but no, just the miracle of Hanukkah itself, of the Nitzachim over the Yevonim, to the degree that they freed the Beit HaMikdash and they got them off their back. They were oppressing them, you know, imposing their tumor and their garbage and their terrible, terrible philosophy and way of life, and they were imposing it upon the Yidden, and they were metamei the Beit HaMikdash. They brought a Avodah Zorah in, and they were makir chazerim in the Beit HaMikdash, and you know, they gained control, you know, of everything. So what happened was we overcame the Yevonim, and we gained control over the Beit HaMikdash, and then they liked to keep the candles, and then that happened. You know, so as far as the Buddhist Hashem concerned the fact that we got back the Beit HaMikdash and the Yidden were able to go on with their Buddhist Hashem, that was at that point of history. You know, that's when the miracle of Mitzvah Hanukkah took place. But the actual whole historical background of the kings, and the kings were the kings in Egypt and in Syria and in Jordan, the whole business, like, that was only one thing. It was interesting that the big victory eventually, like you say, the big wars afterwards, and there's no celebration for it, nothing, zero. I mean, I'm sure they didn't have that Korach HaTov. As I say, there was different Yom Tovim that was made. It wasn't Yom Tovim Yenetzah, you know, but they, of course, they didn't, it was a victory in it, but there was no Zecher of it. The end of Hanukkah was for the small little part, which was, for as far as Yiddishkeit was concerned, was everything. You know, you see that they weren't interested in celebrating, this big war that they kind of, the thing that the counts in Klal Yisrael was the Avodas Hashem, and it was a physical battle, and they won it. But that, you know, and we made yantav over the Nitzachim, the Mordek Nitzachim over the Yevonim. But when you look at it, you know, look at the Goyish history, it was only like a little small part. But like in Torah history, in Emes, the world of Emes, the light of Emes, so it was awesome big. Okay, Rabbi Shai. I would suggest that the Olam maybe should continue, the least of the week, as a minor upgrade, the avoidance of Oishis, with the sisters and the children, the mother, try to make it a little bit more in depth. Try to, if you find out more Chazal about the mitzvahs, if you could, or about the sisters, and it really, like, all of this, our lifestyles, and life projects. In other words, this thing about the Oishis, it's really a way of life. It's really something, our whole life we should do this all the time. We, like, take it out and freshen it up and dust it off. I mean, the Chanukah is for Chanukah, but we do it for the week or 2 weeks, and then we go on to something else. But too much all of this are things that you could be makabel to do it, all the time. They're all very important aspects of our Yiddishkeit. Unfortunately, most of the things that we do here are things that are neglected by the Olam at large out there. Baruch Hashem, we have our chabura here, people that are interested in elevating themselves over the seaboard, over other people. That's what we're here for. The seaboard is made up of very chushev people, of very fine people. But nevertheless, these things are so important, and yet they're neglected. So we want to lift ourselves up over the seaboard at large, and do something about it. That's what our purpose is. But Hashem, if you have people that understand that they want to, lift themselves up over the run-of-the-mill people, and they want to, try to lift themselves up above the general class of people. Okay, Rabbi Tzai. The order for this week is that I want to come back to something that our veterans here, we've done it already in the past, and our system is that we come back to periodically make it back. We make our way back to the. We know that you have the mitzvahs that we do every day. We put on tefillin, and the tzitzis, the oisis, not oisis, but we do our mitzvahs every day. And Rachman said they're avarice. And then people look at this, the middle road of things that are secular things, we call it, gashmi figure things that are done in the neshach of the day, that necessities of life, right? Some pure necessities, some things are elective, some of them are necessary, necessities, but the program of life that we need, that we live, that we call in the gray area, like it's not very rich, not rich, it's just somewhere in the middle. But the Maisa, when we sit down and analyze the gray area, so there's almost every one of them, you can always find some label that you can attach onto it of some mitzvah that we're really accomplishing when we do it, right? Like, for example, brushing the teeth. So it's a mitzvah of Rishmat Nesachem, right? You polish your shoes. So you see, most of us, when we brush our teeth, we're doing it because our mothers, when we were kids, drilled it into our heads that we should brush our teeth. So we don't even think, when we brush our teeth, it's like a habit, a good habit that we have since we're young. The mother's knocked into our head, that, that's what you have to do. So it's automatic when you take the toothbrush, use it, don't give it too much thought. We know that it's one of the routines that you have to go through during the course of the day. And you got, most of your mother, she, saw to it that Karen, if you did it, it became part of your lifestyle, part of the activities of the day. You must always start off the day with brushing your teeth. But when you think about it, objectively, the mitzvah connected there, right? Because the mitzvah of Mishmat and Mitzvah and Nafshah Seichem, because it's important to keep your teeth in good order, right? People don't realize how important it is. Besides, like, having teeth in your mouth, you know, but if you don't have the teeth, so then you can't chew properly, really, and then you don't digest it properly, and you maybe start having problems with your stomach. The proper teeth affect the stomach. The food really to be digested properly by the stomach has to be chewed very properly with the teeth. Right? So if you don't have the proper teeth, sometimes it's difficult to chew them properly. So sometimes your whole health is affected by having good teeth. And when you have good teeth, like, you should brush them, take care of them, right? So, let's say when a person brushes their teeth in the morning, before they start brushing, they have this in mind that they're now about to brush what they want to eat, the kind of the mitzvah of the Shabbat and the Shabbat Station, right? So, what he's doing, just by being the tzaris, that one little machshava, putting that little machshava, he is creating such an explosion in the maaser. It's so awesome that, like, if somebody described it to you, we're able to describe it, the world of Ruchnius, the structure of Ruchnius, that it's so awesome that one of the difficulties of this uvda is because our mind can't accept that all you do is do a little thought, and that thought, you know, has such a power to convert maaser. It's something so awesome and so great. Like I told you, in order, you know, like, you wanted to alter the maaser, to make a metamorphosis into something, you know, from a kosher maaser into a mitzvah, you have to go to the mitzvah at least 300 times table, and you have to fast, and, you know, put on a few garfuls or something. And I don't know what else you have to do. Go to the Rizal mikveh in Tzfat, cold water, like freezing water. Then you roy to take such a thing like you're taking a secular mice. I call it secular, but a freshener, mundane thing, a garfuls to a mice, and now you're going to convert it into a nice mystery, like the alchemist, you know, of the days in the gone by, to take brass and make it into gold. To also, I don't know what kind of means they had, kishif, what, I don't know where they got the powers from. So over here also, you want, you know, you're going to think something, you're going to convert this act, now you're converting it, making something into a Dvar Mitzvah. Before was now it's a Dvar Mitzvah with your mind. It's hard to believe that the tools that you have to make this shinui is just, you know, thinking in your mind. Right? As you've only going before he was Nifta, I think he took either, it's a citrus, I don't know if it's a citrus or an esrin, it's a citrus hand. He said, you know, he started crying before his birthday, and he said, people don't understand that for a few grush, how much the citrus cost, whatever, how much rukhnis a person could be paying for a few grush of money, like, how much should be paying it? We don't realize the value of the citrus, the rukhnis that we're paying it, and the shleimus that we get, and the madrega it puts us on, and the citrus, right? So, the what is the mile of it is that, it's a pressure maitre, and you're making it into like citrus. I just brought down the going, the building going, that we should appreciate what a maitre mitzvah is. Like, I'm just crying, one little mitzvah like this is. So, if I tell you that you're brushing your teeth, and you think you're doing it in the Shem Shemayim, instead of just brushing it automatically because your mother drew you on to do it, but you think that you're doing it in the Shem Shemayim, So then it's almost like converting it, in the kosher thing, something special, right? That's something special that the Vilna Gaon was talking about. We're trying, we don't understand the chashivus, a very little mitzvah, what it can, So basically, that's our Ogdol HaMaisa. Ogdol HaMaisa is that we want to work on this inyan of the Chav and the Shem Shemayim. It's really a whole siman of the Shulchan Aruch, I believe that it's you find it, but the main point I just wanted to say is that the chashivas that we are doing by just putting this on in is such an awesome chashivas that, I say it again, sometimes the mind doesn't accept that all you have to do is give a little thought. This thought that you give doesn't cost any money, right? And it kibbutz doesn't take any time, and hardly any effort, I would say. And just think that thought of what the mitzvah is, and it's sitting there, you're making a metamorphosis from what this can do to something else completely. That's an awesome thing.
So if I'm driving to Makola to pick up some milk, I'm supposed to be thinking, what mitzvah am I doing? Helping my wife, or I don't know
And then she has to think of, now you're doing a mitzvah, and you think it's a mitzvah. First you have to think, like you have to meditate, or you have to appropriate, like, what mitzvah actually would you, and then you have to try to think the mitzvah, intensive concentration. And then you have to forget other people. You can apply it to
something that one has to continually be doing. Or if one says, every time I go to the store, I want to have kavana right now. I'm doing it l'shem mitzvah. I'm doing it anytime I'm going to be like brushing my. It's just the concept that the Rav has been talking about is like, I know that I've like heard it many times and about Parnassa, and when one's involved in learning from Parnassa, if one's doing it l'shem, because one needs a Parnassa, but it's really all l'shem Shemayim, so then even the Parnassa and one's involvement in Parnassa can be considered as one involved in Ruchnius type.
Right.
But l'maisa, when one's in the middle of one's day for like whatever, 8 hours a day, one can't be thinking about that the whole day. It just doesn't happen. So how often does one have to do that in order to be in l'maisa?
First of all, as far as the framework, the framework of the it certainly was not suggesting that we should do that. Think about the whole day at all whatsoever. That's like a goal. Maybe if we work on it for years and years and years, the halavai that should reach such a thing. As far as the uvda is concerned, just twice a day, just pick something. I mean, if you try to be aware of this thing during the course of the day, besides doing it twice a day, so you're not going to be over, you're not going to get an einish for it, if you try to be aware of it, and you won't be over about toysit. But, and to be aware of it the whole day, that's the supreme goal of goals, that I guess the person really elevates himself with the years, and maybe years and years and years, because wants to strive for that, I guess. Certainly not our hope. There's something that we strive for, that maybe after many, many years we will be able to achieve that. The Ovdol HaMaisa for me is about just twice a day, try to relate to the mitzvah, understanding that you could do it now, and this is what the side benefits of the mitzvah of this thing, and it twice a day, twice a being a chavan. Some avodas Hashem, take a machshava into the. Of course, you have to be equipped a little bit with the different civilian, right? To be able to label it, right? You know, sometimes the Chazal themselves can help you out with this. I know Rav Miller used to say over all the time, I guess one of his favorites is that the Gemara says that why is a person allowed to wash the face? It's a similar isha. In other words, anything that's unique to women to do, not only clothing, similar isha, but also an act. So it seems like washing faces is something that like the women do. You know, so my answer, how are we allowed to wash our faces? Like Simas Isha. My answer is because we're Selim al-Kin, and if you have a statue of the king in your house, you should dust it off and keep it clean. It's an honor for the king. So that's the heter to wash your face. So when you wash your face in the morning, it's a beautiful thing to have that in mind. If you didn't know the Chazal, so you would say maybe it's just Kiddush Hashem. Which I have to mamish run right now. It was wonderful being with you again tonight. Shef Brocha Vatzlocha. Right, we should all be matzliach with our Avodas Hashem. Just a little bit.